Hello everyone, welcome to This Week in Stupid for the 7th of September 2014, where I'm sure you'll agree it seems like the world is suffering from an advanced case of dementia. Let's start as we mean to go on, shall we? GQ's Man of the Year is philanthropist Tony Blair, known for his philanthropy and nothing else. In 2007, Tony Blair stepped down as Prime Minister, but his surging momentum's shown no sign of slowing. Alongside his role as Middle East Peace Envoy, Blair's channeled energy into philanthropy, establishing three charities. The Tony Blair Faith Foundation provides practical support required to counter and prevent and extremism in order to promote an open-minded and stable society. That's what they wrote about him. On winning Philanthropist of the Year, Blair says, "I would like to dedicate this award to the people that work with and for my organizations. I feel the pulse of progress beating a little harder." Which is weird, because when I look at him, he looks like the sort of man who wakes up in the middle of the night with the screams of dead Iraqi children ringing in his ears. But whatever helps you sleep at night, Tony. In response to the leaked photos of Jennifer Lawrence, the Huffington Post decided to woman down with another batch of stupid articles. My favourite was "The Sexual Violence of Non-Consensual Nudity." That's right, pictures can be violent now. Of course, the violence comes in the form of victim blaming. Some will gleefully denounce her as a slut or think something to the effect of, "Well, she shouldn't have taken them, she didn't want people to see." Well, it's really not so much that she shouldn't have taken them, it's that she shouldn't have uploaded them to the cloud. But only a very few people will feel sympathy for her and recognise what distributing nude photos without the subject's express consent truly is. Sexual assault. We've become a society that feels entitled to the nudity of others. Consent is not required, just as long as we get our fill of flesh. I wonder if it's anything to do with all those slut walks you guys do. If I was looking for entitlement to nudity, I'd probably start there. The moment Lawrence's private photos went on public display, social media erupted. Some Twitter users praised her body, some criticised her figure. Neither seems to be appropriate reaction to a gross invasion of privacy. Others bemoaned the low quality of the photos. This line of reasoning implies that if Lawrence was going to pose in the buff, she should have had the courtesy to provide us with the highest caliber revenge porn. A, it's not revenge porn. And B, I'm not really that surprised that people wanted high-quality photos of her. But of course, this is a sexual assault case, so victim blaming runs thick in situations like these. If she didn't want those pictures on the internet, she shouldn't have taken them. Well, that would have prevented it, but in other words, the price of these women's private expressions of sexuality and joyous celebration of their bodies is public humiliation. Yeah, that was an exact translation of what they were just saying. You know, not, well, this could have been prevented. She is a world-famous movie star with legions of adoring fans and the idol of teenage boys. But yeah, it's about public humiliation. "Don't send nudes, we tell our daughters, rather than telling our sons, don't violate the privacy of a woman who trusted you enough to share herself with you in a playfully sexual context." I wonder if it's something to do with the amount of time it takes to tell each one. We don't teach our children not to revel in revenge porn. We teach them to put boundaries on their sexual expression. Fucking hell. That must be the most uncomfortable conversation anyone has ever had with a parent. And then the doublethink kicks in. Bearing another human on a public stage for ridicule and critique is an excusable, if even understandable, action. Why would you say that? I don't understand why you would just say that. You just said, no, it's not excusable. What are you talking about? Okay, so we need to teach our sons not to do it, but it's okay if they do. Okay, that's... Alright. But then we don't tell our sons, don't send people photos of your penis. God, the writing on these is so bad, it throws me out when I'm reading it, because it doesn't read like a fucking sentence. They say, we don't tell sons... Don't send people photos of your penis to someone if they haven't told you they're okay with it. Just, can we get some people who passed their GCSEs to write for once? Perhaps the most offensive aspect of our conflicting attitudes towards nudity and the importance of consent is that while women are derided for their own exploitation, the actions of a man forcing images of his genitals upon his victims are utterly erased when the tables are turned and his behaviour is exposed. Really, so if photos of the latest, I don't know, Hollywood hunk, if photos of his dick were leaked and circulated around the internet. Are you telling me that women wouldn't look? But the worst aspect of this is Cancer Foundation returns cash from Redditors who saw J-Law nudes. Because apparently the donations came out of a crude joke about masturbation. The Prostate Cancer Foundation returned all money donated via a post on the website Reddit that was designed to make a joke about the leaked naked images of Jennifer Lawrence and a slew of other famous women hacked from the Apple iCloud accounts. We would never condone raising funds for cancer research in this manner. Out of respect for everyone involved and in keeping with our own standards, we're returning all donations that resulted from this post, the foundation said in a statement Tuesday. Well, listen, we thought you were trying to cure cancer. But no, they've turned into the social justice warrior police of vice and virtue. Listen, dipshit. Just take the money and fucking cure cancer. You talk like you're not expecting to cure cancer anytime soon. So you said, well, we don't need those funds. You could have just made a statement that said, what they did was wrong, but at least they've righted that by donating money to cancer charities. And speaking of the police of vice and virtue, Saudi Arabian religious police beat a man for using an ATM meant only for women. Three members of the police of vice and virtue have attacked Peter Howarth Lee and his wife out of a supermarket where they had used a woman-only ATM. Then, suddenly and very violently, the three of them attacked me and threw me to the ground, Howarth Lee says. They threw me to the ground and tried unsuccessfully to take my phone. All three men repeatedly kicked his head and back, and one even stomped on his face, he said. What kind of fucking patriarchy are they running in Saudi Arabia? Women-only ATM implies that women are allowed to have money. His wife then fought the patriarchy and managed to push them off, which allowed him to get back on his feet for a few minutes, only for one to leap on him again. At this point, the man managed to kick my wife in the stomach before I got her to the other side of the car to get inside, he said. Fucking hell! I found it weird that they didn't just go up to the guy and say, excuse me, sir, would you like some money? You appear to be using a woman-only ATM machine. Let me give you stacks of free cash as a fellow member of the patriarchy. But from a patriarchy to a matriarchy. Feminism now topic A at elite high school. After traces of male entitlement were found in a male student's newspaper column, some students at a New York City school congregated around a Facebook page this summer to discuss culture changes at their female-dominated high school. Traces of male entitlement. What was this entitlement, you ask? It all started when a male peer wrote a newspaper column about the dating problems of boys at Townsend Harris High School, which is 70% female. Detractors called the article an example of male entitlement, and over the summer they have congregated around a Facebook page, which attracts daily posts. The article, by then junior Ross Simagala, I don't know, argued that the girls unfairly labelled boys in high school as undateable. The entitlement to not want to be undateable. Ross, you giant twat. I often see some of my perfectly nice and dateable male friends ignored by the young women they pursue. He wrote a 436-word piece published in the May issue of The Classic, a 30-year-old award-winning publication. I have to ask, why would you want to date them if they labelled you as undateable? Are you masochists or something? I would have thought at a high school with 70% women, you would be just swamped with opportunities. Student response to the piece was fierce. Within hours of publication, Jacine Raylan posted her Facebook page. It appalls me. Why is this being reported on? It appalls me that even in a school where the majority of demographics are girls, sexism is still alive and real. You cannot identify as a feminist and deny that the article was promoting male entitlement and that it promoted rape culture. It's gruesome, but it's true! Being the brave feminist that she is, she quickly created a public Feminism at Townsend Facebook page, something I can't believe didn't already exist, which has been gaining momentum throughout the summer as a place for students to comment on the episode. What everyone needs to realise is that when enough girls are made to feel, you have to feel this way. Like they owe guys for everything they do. What are you talking about? When we feel like everything must be our faults, when we've done nothing wrong, if you're saying, oh, he's undateable, you are the person who has made him feel that way. You fucknut. When we can't believe that we matter, apart from the opinion of others, there is a problem. Fuck me! These are the next generation of leaders, everyone. At least there is something called the Brotherhood. Male classmate Kasim came to his defense. He addresses all sides and makes a good argument on the whole matter. He doesn't just criticize girls, he also comments on the faults of men. I don't get this whole fierce feminist reaction. Of course you don't, because you're not a gender ideologue. A majority of his supporters were male, while all those with objections to the article were female, to no one's surprise. He denied his article reeked of male entitlement because he had no idea what they were fucking talking about. To be completely honest, I didn't even think of it in that way, which is completely normal because only mental cases think of it in that way. I just wrote about it what I noticed was happening to guys. In a follow-up conversation a few months after the controversy, he said he even understands why girls were so fired up that he wrote over what he wrote, but he didn't intend to create a dispute. That's really conciliatory of you. I would have just called them fucking mental. The column also touched on a sore point at the school, which maintains a strict dress code on female clothing. Rules prohibit tank tops, showing off the midriff, and shorts or skirts that are shorter than the length of an ID card, from kneecap to the hemline. Oh wow, fucking Puritan. Female students feel these rules are sexist. Well, if the only people who wear these sort of clothes are females, then yes, I imagine you would do. We may be a majority in the school, but we still face problems. That's it, mob rule, that's what it is. We're being told that our bodies are a distraction to boys. Yes. Now would you fucking listen? Now Ross's article is making it seem like we owe boys something. No, it's not. I'm not saying that Ross seems to be a misogynist, but you are directly implying it. But I think it's irrefutable that his article had traces of male entitlement. You're a fucking idiot. Fellow student Allegra Santo agreed. Of course she did, because she's stupid too. I see the vague attempt to say, hey, I'm not saying I'm entitled to your body and time, but really, that's what's being said here. Absolute fucking lunacy. You're seeing what you want to see. You're not seeing what's actually there, you morons. They handed out posters in the school lobby in early June that argued, dress codes are perpetuating rape culture and oppressive objectification towards women. According to an article on Think Progress, similar posters were handed out in a high school in Quebec, Canada. The high school literally said, the dress code is the dress code, and I don't do it because I think girls look sluttish. I do it because we want you to dress like professionals and get ready for the real world. See, there's your problem. They're not interested in the real world. They're interested in being absolutely fucking barking. With Gamergate still raging, Leigh Alexander is somehow still given a platform to talk shit. Video games and the way we write and talk about them are growing up. The old school fans are kicking and screaming. The 21st century's defining medium, video games, is experiencing sharp growing pains. Over the last few weeks, identity tensions have divided fans online in a strange, ugly episode rooted in how writers discuss games and who is allowed to participate. At the root of all of this is a fascinating question. Are games technology product or cultural experience? Is that really the question everyone's asking at the moment, Leigh? While as a pastime those projects are slightly juvenile, which just goes to show that the only reason you're in this is for money, so are southern superhero blockbusters featuring talking raccoons, and few would begrudge fans those, nor handwriting about their supposed effect. Games' poor public image has long been a source of discouragement to everyone who creates and plays within a rapidly maturing, surprisingly diverse medium. Go on. The advent of the smartphone means that your average consumer now has access to a platform to play on. That's really interesting. Could you suggest any social justice warrior games or game studios that I could buy from? Oh, you can. Many of these, like Cappy, Super Brothers, Sword and Sorcery, or Vlambeer's Ridiculous Fishing. You know what, I'm going to stop you there, because I've got a bit of a history with Vlambeer's Rami is Male. For those unfamiliar, he's a social justice warrior who is commenting on Gamergate. See, regardless of what Gamergate was, we can slowly start to have a discussion about journalism and the ethics that separate from it. Sadly, the people using Gamergate to hurt have used your cause to cause a lot of harm, and we've lost some great voices to them. If you really care about ethics and journalism, it's time to step away from the hurt of Gamergate, so we can have that discussion for real. Gah! Even though it feels like we're finally getting somewhere, I can't help but be upset thinking about the people that left the industry. It's sad and disappointing that as an industry, as a community, we can and should do better. We've all failed in the past week or two. And my personal favourite, I know not all gamers are terrible people. I don't identify as a gamer myself, but I've met so many gamers at PAX that were great people. I've actually got a bit of a history with Rami, where I'd posted in an indie game Facebook page. David Robinson made the most salient observation. I'm also from the UK, and I do not see the world as Rami appears to, because at the time he was going off about how oppressed women are. And it does not appear that many of the women around me do either. Perhaps Rami lives in a Muslim country where this sort of thing is institutionalized, but I do not find this to be representative of the industry as a whole. Who knows? Perhaps all the women around me live in a constant state of terror that I can't pick up on because when my girlfriend is shouting at me to take the bins out, or that it's my turn to do the washing up, but then she has a good set of lungs on her. For this terribly offensive comment, Rami reported it, and then said, "For the sake of full disclosure, I've reported your comment attacking my cultural heritage." Rami, you're a fucking idiot. Fuck your cultural heritage, fuck yourself, you're an idiot. You know full fucking well that's not what I was doing, and you're a dipshit, attempting to use bully boy tactics to silence me, literally to silence me, and flag my post, which was perfectly reasonable, just because you don't fucking like it. Fuck yourself. Anyway, enough of feminist game developers who aren't gamers, let's talk about feminist skateboarders. With Shred the Patriarchy, women grab their air and their space at a male-dominated Payne's Park. I'd noticed that they did picture her sitting down. Today is skate day, kiddos. Wouldn't that be every day for the horizontally mobile? Not for Shred the Patriarchy, an informal feminist-slanted group. I don't think it's just slanted, I think it's just feminist. That has been sending a message over Facebook for much of the summer to meet at Payne's Park on Thursdays and Sundays. These loose collection of women from all stripes, its flyers call for any female-identified folks, are hardly typical or hugely welcome amongst the guys performing sprint speed feats on boards and bikes. I am not fucking surprised in the slightest. Why would you want the Killjoy Brigade to turn up at the last bastion of male activities? Shred the Patriarchy, organised on Facebook by 20-year-old philosophy student Sky Kalfas, everything is becoming clear, isn't it? Is there to establish a presence for women in skateboard parks? Why? Just why? As well as an opportunity for them to get better. I wasn't comfortable skating here by myself, said Kalfas, a native Philadelphian on a summer break from Oberlin College in Ohio. I remind myself that I belong here, though people act like I don't. I get the feeling that is actually how you can figure out whether you do belong somewhere, you fucking idiot. A self-described internet feminist, feminism has descended through blogs and social media, and not a feminist made up of the internet, she sees the park as one of many male-dominated spaces. The world is an entire skate park, right? No! Fucking what? Sometimes I feel in the way because I don't know how to skate well. Well look, if you feel in the way and you don't know how to skate well, go and practice. Don't sit there talking to people about how you feel about it because, frankly, they're not under any obligation to give a fuck about how you feel about it. The park, located near the art museum, is a series of slopes and ledges, much of it granite, looking something like the inside of a seashell. Right, okay. Shredding refers to the skating to the extreme, although obviously Kalfas uses the word with multiple meanings. Yes, of course she does. She makes up her own definitions because she's a feminist and doesn't care. Collisions among skaters are inevitable, but surprisingly infrequent, whatever the gender or level of skill. But when they happen, the skaters react nonchalantly, often not exchanging a word. Also silent is the scrutiny of the 2 to 7 Shred the Patriarchy women at any given meeting. Guys skate by, their eyes full of questioning. Yes, wondering, why the fuck are they here? Can't they just leave us alone? We weren't bothering them. The women don't try to blend in. Kalfas wears a bright tie-dye t-shirt, smart girl glasses, and a helmet. She sounds like she looks like Lisa Simpson. Others wear bright red lipstick and eyeliner. Dalka doesn't shave her legs. People at skate parks ask me if I'm a he/she, she says in a characteristically imposing voice. Though biologically female, she describes herself as having transcended gender. I'm not fucking surprised she does. Meridian Lowe, 18, a theatre major at Temple University, dressed in black with skulls and studs, would like to have a destiny on a skateboard but isn't too intimidated to try. All these bros and dudes, And I have a lot of insecurity about taking up space and learning how to do something that involves my body falling and making mistakes. I have to say this to you, Meridian. Skateboarding is not for you. But it's a legit fear. One shredder heard a guy saying, they're really mumming up the place. Yes, because they are. They don't really want to be there. They're only there because their ideology has pushed them there. One skater said, I think it's pretty cool they're here. Adding that the minute they walk into the skate park, they're no longer seen as dating prospects. Well, ladies, if you're looking to not be dated by anyone, get down to your local skate park. Dalsa was less than impressed at the helpful tips offered that included a bit of male condescension and less than appropriate touching. I'm sure that everyone was desperate to touch the he-she who has transcended gender. Other parks can be more menacing. FDR Skate Park has unprintable graffiti saying in no uncertain terms that beginnings aren't welcome. Does it say STFU noobs? At the Grey Fairies Crescent Skate Park, one weeknight, Kalfus and Dalka, witnessed a pocket knife pulled amongst guys in a short-lived scuffle. God, they are just mumming the place up completely. Why even do it? You'll never know by just watching. The first step on a skateboard is like slipping on a hyper banana peel, and something completely contrary to what kids are taught, to keep their feet on the ground and to hold on with both hands. It's an exhilarating renegade experience. For my mother. Fucking hell. Also, just stay off Tumblr, kids. Seriously, kids, stay off of fucking Tumblr. Also, I do enjoy torturing you. In other hilarious news, forced to fight. Disillusioned British jihadists afraid to come home. Oh yeah, British jihadists in Syria are becoming increasingly disenchanted with their military pursuits in the region and wish to return to their homeland, it emerged. Yeah, their homeland. The jihadists have reportedly grown frustrated that they are no longer fighting against President Assad's military forces, but rather engaged in attacks against rival rebel factions. The man, who wishes to remain anonymous, contacted a group of academics at the International Study for Radicalization and Political Violence at King's College London. He expressed his frustration and concern to researchers based there, via social media, according to the Times. We came here to fight the regime, and instead we are involved in gang warfare. It's not what we came for, but if we go back to Britain, we'll go to jail. Right now, we are being forced to fight. What option do we have? I tell you, my heart really goes out to these guys. All they wanted to do is fight in a holy war for ISIS. They didn't want to have to fight against other rebels in a chaotic quagmire of political bullshit that's going on over there. The director of ISCR told the paper that he estimates up to 20% of British militants based in Syria could be looking for an avenue to disengage from jihadist pursuits in the region. The people we've been talking to, they want to quit but feel trapped because all the government is talking about is locking them up for 30 years. It might be something to do with them willingly going off to Syria to join a terrorist organisation to conduct terrorism in Syria. I mean, is it? But I mean, no, I mean, it's probably not that. Nieremann called upon the British government to set up an official state de-radicalisation scheme, suggesting disillusioned British jihadists could become potent and persuasive speakers against the ideology that underpins Islamic State. That is possible, but why should we? His policy proposal echoes sentiments expressed by Labour leader Ed Miliband, pictured here kicking the shit out of a Turkish protester. Miliband called for the coalition to create a mandatory de-radicalization program for all those who were peripherally involved with the Islamic State, or he'd kick the living hell out of them. David Cameron called for all-out nuclear war against ISIS when he said to NATO leaders on Thursday that Britain was prepared to use everything we have in our armory to obliterate the Islamic State terror group. His staunch threat was issued at the Alliance's summit in Wales, in which he desperately tried to compensate for his absolutely tiny cock. Such military action, however, does not appear imminent at present because politicians are full of shit. And the winner of the Not My Fucking Problem, Pal award is whichever jihadists are currently fighting in Syria who have expressed concern on social media outlets that they will forfeit martyrdom and an afterlife in paradise if they lose their lives over fighting other jihadist groups rather than Assad's regime. I mean, I don't know what they think they were getting when they joined a radical terrorist organization, but ISIS threatening to liberate Chechnya and the Caucasus from Vladimir Putin is probably not wise. ISIS jihadists in Syria have made a video threatening to bring the Russian Republic of Chechnya into their self-proclaimed caliphate after capturing Russian-made planes in Syria. The radical Islamists, who have been fighting the government forces of Bashar Assad, have captured a key base in Tabaka in northern Syria late last week. Amongst their loot was a hangar containing several antiquated Soviet-made Sukhoi planes, which prompted the jihadists to record a video that has now gone viral. After specifically addressing Vladimir Putin, the militants threatened to send back the aircraft the Russian leader gave to Bashar. Another militant then claims that Chechnya and the Caucasus will be liberated. Putin is obviously quaking in his fucking boots. But I don't really get this. Are these like infidel planes or something? The Chechens actually weren't best pleased with this, as Ramzan Kadyrov, a flamboyant president of the Chechen Republic, which is highly autonomous part of Russia, reacted angrily to the video. "Those bastards have nothing to do with Islam. They are the enemies of Muslims everywhere," he wrote on his Facebook page. "Whoever dares threaten Russia and say out loud the name of our president Vladimir Putin will be destroyed right where he is. These people will end their days under the hot sun of Syria and Iraq, and moments after death they will be greeted by the flames of eternal hell." A response which left little ambiguity as to how the Chechen president felt about joining ISIS. Kadyrov also intimated that IS took orders from their handlers in Western security services. That's right, they may well be CIA-backed and controlled. And Vladimir Putin finishes off our wrap-up this week from Elite Daily. "Man down. How Vladimir Putin embodies the worst of the men's rights movement." MRAs, I think you're going to want to sit down. I think you're going to enjoy this. "Outward machismo, signs of brute strength. Cold, calculating manner seemingly devoid of any human element. These are the traits more expected from the men's rights movement forums, those frequented by the likes of Elliot Rodger, who transformed the anger and ideals he fostered on those sites into a shooting rampage that killed 6 and wounded 13 others in Isla Vista, California. They're also embodied by one world leader, Russian President Vladimir Putin." Which is really interesting because, if I recall correctly, and I do, Elliot Rodger was subscribed to a bodybuilding forum, an anti-pickup artist forum, and the Young Turks on YouTube. So, sorry Young Turks, you're a bit men's righty these days. Over the last months, Putin has been in the news quite a bit, but instead of being perceived as a formidable leader and a hardline negotiator, he comes off as arrogant, unyielding, and only slightly misogynistic. Well, I'm genuinely surprised that he's only slightly misogynistic. But no, he really does come across as a formidable leader and a hardline negotiator. He actually comes across as a fucking statesman. But I mean, you know, Obama's out playing golf, so that's much more female-friendly. Perhaps Putin thought that by casting himself as the ultimate man, it's brilliant, the evidence of which can presumably be gathered in these photos of him spelunking or wrestling with tigers or riding horses shirtless, and yeah, Vladimir Putin, he is a man's man. Fucking awesome. He'd gain more respect and command more gravitas as he goes toe-to-toe with other government officials. I think he's really showing them in advance that as a member of the KGB and as a judo black belt, he can break them in fucking half. However, Putin's actions proved to be alienating and heartless. His unwillingness to compromise hasn't made him seem strong, but rather a weak negotiator. Except for when he compromised with John Kerry, when he said Syria could give up all its chemical weapons, and Vladimir Putin went, "Done." In embracing this hyper-masculine culture, he's desensitized himself to much of what's going on in the world, especially the tragic deaths of MH17. In his conciliatory statement after learning of the incident, Putin kept his remarks brief, but didn't fail to mention that if fighting in Ukraine hadn't recently resumed, the unfortunate plane crash wouldn't have happened. The doublethink continues, just the complete newspeak. Everything is back to front. His callousness and unwillingness to compromise shouldn't be viewed as a sign of masculine strength, but a real weakness when it comes to making Russia a diplomatic player and partner for the rest of the world. It's just because Russia doesn't agree with the West. It's not because Russia has done anything wrong. They've done nothing different to us. And if anything, in a lot of cases, they've done things better than us. You know, they have. Vladimir Putin has talked down a Nobel Peace Prize winning president from bombing a third world country, and they can say this in a paper and not feel like total shitheads. But Putin's personality doesn't reflect that of a bad state leader. He's eerily replicated many of the machismo effects dictated in the men's rights movement and forums, like one mass shooter Elliot Roger frequented, just because, you know, the propaganda doesn't set in unless you repeat it enough. In an analysis of the toxicity promulgated by the men's rights movement, created in conjunction with former white supremacist and sociology professor, aka guys who would definitely know, Cracked.com said as a major byproduct of the project was hating women because it justified their suffering. A, everything you've said there is obviously propaganda and highly derogatory, but B, are you such fucking tools that you're going to use Cracked.com, a comedy site, as a source of legitimate news and social commentary? Instead of simply hating women, however, Putin has acted distrustfully and outright aggressively towards many groups that simply oppose him in terms of ideas and aims. While when the popular, not to mention all-female band Pussy Riot held an anti-Putin protest at a church, they were sentenced to perform labour at isolated penal colonies for their dissent. Well, is it really dissent, or were they really just causing a lot of hassle to draw attention to themselves personally? Ukraine has similarly felt Putin's indiscriminating wrath over the past few months. If you're not going to say that they've been shelling Kiev repeatedly, then shut your fucking mouths. As he escalated his own country's violent efforts there and in the Crimea, what's he done? Well, there was something like 9 Russian soldiers who were captured in eastern Ukraine because they were obviously invited there by the fucking separatists. And it's not like anyone in the West has got any moral high ground to judge from in this instance. How many SAS were captured in Libya? How many? I could find it, but I'm not going to. Someone else can do that. Honestly, this is unbelievable bullshit, and it really pisses me off. Putin's own paranoia and anger make him a volatile, reactionary figure who presumes that by asserting his own masculinity, he's buoying his reputation and respectability, which is weird because everything I've seen from Putin has been cold, calm, and calculated. But just as the men's rights movement produces toxic attitudes and dangerous, uncontrollable figures like Elliot Rogers, so has Putin's blind machismo, perhaps most directly in the pro-Russian Ukrainian separatists who are believed to have shot down M-17 without reason, even though we don't know if they did actually shoot it down, and even though it looks like it may have been directed over their airspace deliberately, and nothing about this is to do with Putin's blind machismo, you fucknuts, you absolute mentals! But we get to the problem that Putin's really caused. He hasn't made his country more inclusive, remaining utterly backwards on gay rights, nor has he opened channels of communications for other leaders who have made the move to compromise on his and their country's interests. No, they haven't! He's protecting his border from having NATO physically touching it. That's normal! Instead, he's clearly committed to adhering to an outdated and rigid standard of what compromises masculinity. What has this got to do with masculinity, you stupid dipshit? These are in no way intertwined. To the detriment of his country, ours, and the entire international community. Putin can do better, and if not, he continues to act like the men's rights movement is something to be emulated. Holy shit. If you ask, literally, polls of world population, as much, you know, literally, people in every country who have been asked, universally say, America is the threat to global peace. And you've got no qualms saying, well, everyone thinks that it's Russia. Fucking hell. Just fucking hell. They finish up with this magnificent picture of Vladimir Putin posing as Steve McQueen. I don't know about everyone else, but honestly, I'm about ready to pledge my fucking allegiance.